Okay, Tim Versalotti, who is both a terrific pollster, director of the Western New England University poll, professor of political science. Okay, I have a simple question to start out with you this time, and that is, can the Democrats take the House in 2018?
You know, Alan, if you did not archive these on your website, I'd be happy to make predictions like that, but boy, I can be held account to it. Let me put it this way. If we look at current special elections and some state legislative elections that have occurred, we're seeing some real differences in the parties in terms of how they're doing. And we're seeing a level of energy, a level of turnout, not just in some of these House seats that are being filled as a result of President Trump filling out his cabinet, but some special elections in state legislative districts. We're seeing a kind of energy on the part of the Democratic Party that, if the party can sustain it, will definitely put the House in play in 2018.
So what are the indices? In a couple of the special elections, the Republicans won, but they won by less.
That's right. That's right. And it's an interesting calculus, because you see this and you think, well, hold on a minute. These aren't victories. Perhaps they're moral victories. And that's part of the indicator. The Republicans have won, but by much smaller margins. Or we've seen turnout go up in areas where we hadn't seen it go up before. The folks at 538.com, Nate Silver's website, did an analysis recently where they took a look at special elections, not just at the congressional level, but at the state legislative level. And what they've seen is, in these special elections, the partisan lean of the district in question has swung 14.4 percentage points on average toward the Democrats.
Wow.
So that's a fired up base. That's a lot of folks getting out who don't necessarily vote, a lot of new voters. And if the party can sustain that kind of energy, we'll see a pretty exciting cycle in 2018, that's for sure.
So how much of what's going on in terms of what we see in congressional races can be tied directly to Donald Trump?
I think a significant amount of it. These races, although they focus in part on local issues in the districts, President Trump's presence is unavoidable in terms of the candidates and their advertising, and in terms of the money that's being raised. And so I think President Trump fuels the energy that is turning people out, inspires people to get involved who may not have been involved in the past. It's unavoidable. Even when candidates try to keep the issues local, the Trump presidency just hovers over these races.
Now, Trump on health care was very interesting. He says, okay, personal loyalty, and, you know, you got to help me, and you got to put your head basically in a political noose by supporting something that might not be that healthy in your own districts. But you have to do it, and they did it. Then he turned around when the bill, which a lot of people think is awful, went to the Senate, and he said, you guys have got to make it a better bill because their bill was too mean. Now, that's extraordinary. Mm-hmm. How do you reward political loyalty? Those people did it, went out of their way. They knew it wasn't going to help them. And now he said they were too mean.
Yeah, that raised a lot of eyebrows among the punditry, among folks who follow politics, that President Trump, who had celebrated the passage of that
in the Rose Garden,
through the House with that ceremony in the Rose Garden, and then turns around several weeks later and says the bill is mean, the Senate needs to soften some of its provisions. I think it reflects the president's way of doing business, which is he is not an ideologue. He is someone who wants to make a deal, and the contents of the deal seem almost secondary at this point to getting something done. The president has not gotten a whole lot done legislatively since January, and so that seems to be his foremost goal. Now, it's short-term, long-term. Short-term, it might succeed, but long-term, he's harming the loyalty that he needs among the House Republicans, people are going to be far less willing to fall on their swords for him if they feel they're not going to be remembered or rewarded down the road when he steps back and says of a bill, well, it's too mean, we've got to fix it. So it's a perplexing situation if you're a backbencher in the House of Representatives and you're getting some pressure from the White House to stand with the president. You have to ask yourself, well, is the president going to stand with me down the road? And this sequence of events puts that into serious question.
Indeed. Now, the Republicans know that he is immensely popular, as you've already posited on this program, with their base. So if they take him on, what do they risk? In other words, if they disagree with him, what do they risk?
Yeah, they risk a primary challenge, for one thing. He is a prodigious fundraiser, and he recently had a fundraising event for a congressman in New Jersey in the Philadelphia suburbs who had helped to engineer the passage of the health care reform bill in the House of Representatives. And it was very successful, raised a big chunk of money. Members of the House Republican caucus are aware of that and know if they take on Trump, they do that at their peril in terms of a primary challenge and perhaps a well-financed primary challenge in 2018.
Now, the man is a liar. Trump is a liar. He just keeps prevaricating. Do people care?
Well, his base certainly doesn't. Again, if you look at his approval rating among Republican voters, the latest Gallup number is about 83%. And it's more in their eyes, in terms of the base's eyes, pursuing an agenda, getting things done, undoing the legacies of President Obama, and how those goals are accomplished, that is secondary, or so it would seem. The president's base just seems inured to any claims about his truthfulness. Now, that's all well and good for now, but wow, when you're running for re-election, you've got to run with a base broader than about a third of the country, which is the base that's supporting him right now. So again, short-term, long-term, it would be interesting to see what these numbers say as we approach 2020.
Now, as the numbers go to the upper 30s, lower 40s, his numbers, doesn't that portend a disaster for him?
Well, it would for most ordinary politicians. You see an incumbent anywhere below 45%, and you'd say, well, this individual is in trouble. This particular president, though, is a master of the media, of setting the agenda. And so numbers in the upper 30s, low 40s now, may not be sound predictors of what is going to happen a few years from now. He's rewritten the rule book on so many aspects of American politics that we don't want to make predictions too far out, because our past record shows, and by that I mean most people who follow polls or academics or pundits, our past record isn't so great in predicting how President Trump is going to fare in the future. But yeah, he has a base that does not seem bothered when it's pointed out that something the president has said is patently false. It just doesn't bother them.
We are talking to Tim Bersolotti. We love talking to him. Director of the Western New England University poll. They are so lucky to have you there. Professor of political science, and I may say my friend. Thank you so much for being with us, Tim.
Come back. You're very welcome.
When we come back the next time, I got lots of questions for you.